one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. It's your midweek solo edition of the podcast, but man, do we have a lot to get to. Big Phillies news as we started the week here, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And just like I did last week, we're going to give you a starting lineup of Phillies topics here. So I got nine Phillies topics to talk to you about here on the evening. We'll talk about the Zach Wheeler controversy, Jesus Luzardo is an all-star. We'll talk some trade deadline stuff, Don Mattingly's future with the team, a farm system ranking that was eyebrow-raising for sure, and a bunch of other stuff to get to you here on this edition of Hittin' Season. But real quick, before we jump into the show, I just want to encourage everybody to please leave a five-star rating over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you listen to your podcast. That would really help the podcast grow quite a bit, and we would love to increase the number of folks who get to enjoy this podcast. So please put us on blast if you're listening to us at the beach or something like that. Crank it up so the entire beach can hear down the shore. Let everybody in Seattle City, I mean, most of Seattle City knows the Hittin' Season podcast anyway, but just in case there's some folks who are late to the party, crank that up as you're driving down the street. You know what I mean? Like, if you got it on your deck as you're having a barbecue down the shore, wherever it is you're, Cape May, you know, Rehoboth, wherever it is. I know Rehoboth's not the Jersey Shore, but, you know, you get my point. Do that so other Phillies fans can find the show and enjoy it as well. All right, let's get into our starting nine lineup of Phillies topics here, and we will start off with a little NL East standings update. The Phillies split their first two games of this series in Cincinnati against the Reds. Not looking good here on Wednesday night, but they won on Tuesday in the first game of the series. So they will be on Thursday looking to win the rubber match and win a series against the Cincinnati Reds, a team that has been struggling of late. They're now 42 and 49. They came into the game 41 and 49. They're 16 and a half back in the NL Central. The Reds are quickly turning into sellers here at the trade deadline. They're 8.5 games out of a wild card spot. So this is an opportunity for the Phillies to kind of be maybe looking at their roster. Is there anybody on the Reds that would be of interest to the Phillies as we go along here? In these first two games, the pitching was great on Tuesday night, not so good on Wednesday, but in splitting these first two games and with the Atlanta Braves winning on Wednesday, the Braves have increased their lead over the Phillies once again to three games. The Phillies whittled it down to two, but it's now three games. And don't look now, but those Miami Marlins are now tied with the Phillies in the National League East, also three games back of the Atlanta Braves. The Marlins are playing some unbelievable baseball right now, and the Phillies are kind of treading water. Once they got to 10 games, 11 games over 500, they've been playing pretty much 500 ball. In their last 11 games, the Phillies are 5-6. So a little bit of a, after winning a ton of games under Don Mattingly and just kind of seemingly being on a roll, some of the Phillies' warts are showing themselves here over the last 2 weeks or so, and the Phillies just 5-6 in their last 11 games. Now, this also coincides with this incredible road schedule the Phillies have undertaken heading into the All-Star break, where they're in their final six series heading into the All-Star game, five of them will have been on the road. So just four home games over the course of the last 2.5 weeks of the first half of the season. That is difficult, and it really doesn't matter who you're playing. Playing that many road games is difficult. So I think the Phillies are just kind of getting a little bit tired here. A lot of these guys are going to need this All-Star break just to kind of rejuvenate themselves and get back into it. But right now, the Phillies and Marlins are tied for second place in the National League East, three games behind the Atlanta Braves, as the Phillies have just four games left before the All-Star break. That was our leadoff hitter here. Batting number two here in our lineup of Phillies topics, we got to talk about what's going on with Zach Wheeler. First of all, an incredible outing on Tuesday night against the Reds. Seven innings, four hits, one run allowed, no walks, and he ties a career high with 14 strikeouts. His season ERA is now down to just 2.28 on the season. Clearly miffed with his start against the Pittsburgh Pirates at Citizens Bank Park last week, where he couldn't get through the fifth inning. had over 100 pitches, got the first two outs in the fourth inning, but then gave up three straight singles and was not allowed to finish the fifth inning as the Phillies were holding on. They had a big lead at the start of that game, and Wheeler had kind of let them back, the Pirates back into it. And Don Mattingly just, he did not want to lose that game. He did not want to blow that lead. And he went out and got Zach Wheeler, who was struggling in that game against the Pirates, just really having a hard time finishing at bats. A lot of strikeouts, but he threw a lot of pitches, was not economical. And when you're over 100 pitches and you haven't gotten through the fifth inning, that's a struggling performance. Now, when you're Zach Wheeler, if that's your definition of a struggling performance, you know you're one of the best pitchers in baseball. But he was embarrassed by that. He was angry at Don Mattingly for taking him out of the game. We talked about that on the previous podcast with Justin and Liz. I like that. And he clearly came out on Tuesday night like a man on a mission. He was angry. He pitched angry. It was old school starting pitching from Zach Wheeler. This used to be pretty common among the guys around Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, Bob Gibson, you know, that era of pitcher. These guys would go out there and they would find personal slights to take advantage of. They would get angry. They would go out there and you could tell Zach Wheeler wasn't leaving anything in the tank. He wanted to unload on the poor Cincinnati Reds. And on Tuesday night, he did just that. And averaged 2 strikeouts per inning. 14 strikeouts in 7 innings for Zach Wheeler. Again, tying a career high, that ERA down to 2.28 on the season. But the conversation around Zach Wheeler right now is the fact that he is not an all-star. Despite the fact that Major League Baseball had to announce some replacements for players who were not eligible to pitch, among them Chris Mazeroski of the Milwaukee Brewers, who is also going to pitch on Sunday. Pitchers who pitch the Sunday before the All-Star game are ineligible to pitch in that All-Star game. It is a rule that's been in place for a few years now. This bit the Phillies a couple of seasons ago, or maybe it was even last season, with Christopher Sanchez. When Mazeroski got in over Christopher Sanchez, Christopher Sanchez was not added as a replacement, even though he should have been, because he was pitching on the Sunday before the All-Star break. And so he was denied a deserving All-Star spot. And that went to somebody else. And now the same thing happened to Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler was not named on the initial National League All-Star roster, which is a shame in and of itself, but there was a lot of good pitchers in the National League this year that deserved to be in. And of course, every team has to have at least one representative. There's always going to be a snub or two. And it just so happened that this year Zach Wheeler was snubbed, and it happens. He also missed the first few weeks of the season. So that I'm sure maybe factored into it a little bit, but since he's come back, he has been utterly dominant, as dominant as he has ever been. So, I mean, you could take it, You can take it and understand, you know, okay, you didn't get it first time around. But once these guys drop out, well, Zach Wheeler has to be named. We talked about it on the last podcast. He has to be named to the All-Star team. When we talked about it on the roundtable that we did Sunday night, I did not realize that Zach Wheeler was going to be pitching on Sunday. I should have done my due diligence and my research. So my bad on that. But this is a rule that needs to be thrown away. And after his start on Tuesday, a clearly miffed Zach Wheeler talked about it to the press. And this was on NBC Sports Philadelphia. So give a listen.
It pisses me off, and, you know, it's kind of BS. So, you know, if I wasn't necessarily right in there, I wouldn't be saying this, but I feel like I've earned it. And just because I pitch on a certain day just because I pitch on a certain day, you know, I can't pitch an All-Star game or even be there or get, you know, the recognition for it. You know, they could have did it a few different ways. Maybe, you know, put me in. Maybe, you know, I didn't necessarily have to get chosen right away, but, you know, I feel like I was right there. So maybe they put me in and I'm happy to shoot me right back out and put somebody else in. You know, there's certain ways to do it. And, you know, you figure they would have a clue about it by now, how many All-Star games they've had. And, you know, I think it's kind of just the BS rule that, you know, just because I pitch on a certain day, I, you know, get punished for it, I guess.
And understandable that Zach Wheeler is upset. And he would pitch. He says he would pitch. And I guess this rule was put in place after the tie All-Star game that was played in Milwaukee. It was a long time ago, back in the early 2000s. But managers ran out of pitchers because some guys made the roster but weren't allowed to pitch. And teams are being much more careful about asking their pitchers to pitch in the All-Star game if they have started just 2 days before the game is due to start. Now, I saw one good idea, and that is, well, why don't you just play the All-Star game on Wednesday instead of playing it on Tuesday? Have a couple of days between the final game of the first half on Sunday. Let them rest Monday. Let them rest Tuesday and play the game on Wednesday. You could hold the draft on Monday. You could hold the home run derby on Tuesday, play the game on Wednesday, have a travel day for everybody after the game on Thursday, and then you kick things back into gear on Friday. That way you wouldn't have to tell pitchers like Zach Wheeler, who wants to pitch in this game. He wants to throw an inning in Philadelphia, in his home ballpark. But he's not allowed to. Even if he wants to, he's not allowed to because of this stupid rule. And the fact that this is a guy who wants to be in the Hall of Fame one day. And despite the fact that he's been the most dominant pitcher in the National League since he came to Philadelphia in 2020, and you look at the numbers, he's been one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball since 2018. He ranks first in wins. He's first in Fangraphs wins above replacement. He's second in innings pitched from 2018 to 2026. But he has only three All-Star games to his credit. He's made the All-Star team the last 2 years. He made it in his first season, his first full season in Philadelphia, when he should have won the Cy Young Award and finished runner-up to the Cy Young. He has two runner-up finishes in the Cy Young Award. Age 36, this is age 36 season. He does not have a lot more elite seasons left in him. But here he is with a 2.28 ERA, a 9-1 record, and he's not an All-Star? I mean, that alone should tell you that this rule that you've established stinks. It needs to go away. There's no way Logan Webb, who's 5-7 with a 3.86 ERA, should be in the All-Star game over Zach Wheeler. There's just no reason for it. Jason Stark noted on 97.5 The Fanatic that for Zach Wheeler to not be in the All-Star game with a 9-1 record and a 2.28 ERA, no pitcher has ever not made the All-Star game with a record like that and an ERA like that. He said, I went back through the whole division play era. Every starting pitcher with a record that good and an ERA that low in the first half, only five other pitchers in all those years had an ERA that low and a record that good. They all made the All-Star team. There is no precedent for Zach Wheeler not to make the All-Star team. That's what Jason Stark told 97.5 Unfiltered on Wednesday. The fact that no pitcher in baseball history has had these numbers and not made the All-Star team tells you everything you need to know about what this rule, where this rule needs to go. I think, and I don't have any inside information, I think they're going to find a way. I think they're going to find a way to get him into the All-Star game because it's in Philadelphia, because this does matter for Hall of Fame voting. Like it or not, Hall of Fame voters look at this stuff. They look at Cy Youngs. They look at All-Star games, All-Star appearances, because we're not going to be looking at 300 wins anymore. We're not going to be looking at 3,000 strikeouts anymore, because pitchers don't pitch as much as they used to. The criteria for admitting pitchers, starting pitchers into the All-Star game is wholly different than it was back when Steve Carlton and Nolan Ryan and Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and Tom Glavine and all those guys were getting in. Those guys all pitched so many more innings. Now, Zach Wheeler is kind of a throwback. He's been a guy who's pitched a lot of innings throughout his career. With the exception of last year when he got hurt, he was 200 innings in 24, 192 in 23. He only had 153 in 22, but led the league with 213 innings in 2021. But again, this is a guy who had injuries for the beginning of his career when he was with the Mets. He did not play at all in 2015, did not play in the majors at all in 2016, made just 17 starts in 2017. He didn't really become a full-time starter in Major League Baseball until his age 28 season in 2018 for the Mets. But outside of Nolan Ryan, I don't know if there's been a better starting pitcher in their 30s than Zach Wheeler. I mean, there probably has been. There probably has been. But this is a joke. This has to get fixed. I really hope Major League Baseball will fix it. I hope they'll fix it for this year. I hope they will find a way to get Zach Wheeler on this team so that he can pitch in front of the home crowd in Philadelphia. Number three in the starting lineup, it has to do with the All-Star game here. And it's a Phillies player who made the roster instead of Zach Wheeler. Jesus Luzardo makes the All-Star team. He becomes Phillies All-Star number 6. Now, I predicted the Phillies would get 6, but I thought it would be Wheeler, of course. Instead, it's Jesus Luzardo, who is named an All-Star to replace Mizorowski. And obviously, if you're looking at these two pitchers, Jesus Luzardo or Zach Wheeler is by far the more deserving player. And I would like to think if Major League Baseball did say to Zach Wheeler and the Phillies, hey, we're going to make an exception so Zach Wheeler can pitch in this, but somebody's got to drop out. I would like to think that maybe Jesus Luzardo would be willing to drop out. I mean, he would still, I think, be credited with being named to the All-Star team. I think he would still get that recognition. Jesus Luzardo has never made an All-Star team before, so this is a big deal for him too. And I would hate to see him have to lose this opportunity to pitch in front of the fans in Philadelphia. But you can't give the National League an extra pitcher. You can't give them an extra player. So maybe there will be another pitcher who chooses to bow out, but you can't force it. You can't make it happen. And so Jesus Luzardo, you want to see him in this game because he is a really good starting pitcher. And you don't want to have to take him off the roster to put Zach Wheeler on it. And I don't think he would do that. Maybe he would. I don't know. But Jesus Luzardo, I mean, they get money for making the All-Star team. But not only that, it's a cool experience. Who knows if he's ever going to get a chance to make another All-Star team. And he's having a very weird season. There's really not been a whole lot of in-between for Jesus Luzardo. He's either had starts where he looks like a Cy Young candidate, or starts where he looks like a number 5 starter, a bad number 5 starter. But his 2.96 fielding independent pitching is 7th among all major league starters, which tells you some of the high ERA appears to be some batted ball, bad luck. He has a 3.75 ERA on the season. It's almost a full run higher than his fielding independent pitching. But his 2.9 Fangraphs wins above replacement is tied for 6th best with 5 other pitchers in Major League Baseball. It's 3rd best in the National League, tied with Chase Burns of the Reds and Paul Skeens of the Pirates. So Luzardo, with some of the underlying metrics, does have a good case for the All-Star team. And I do think he has had a weird season. It's been funky. There have been a number of starts where he has not been good. But he's also had a number of starts where he has been unhittable. So it really is interesting. It really is interesting what's going on here with the Phillies in the All-Star game. And I'm happy for Jesus Luzardo. I'm anxious to see him pitch. I'm excited to see him pitch. I think it'll be a lot of fun for him. And it's great to see another Philly was added to the roster. But it's a bummer that it comes at the expense of Zach Wheeler getting onto the All-Star game. And again, I think they'll find a way. I think they will figure it out. Give the American League another roster spot. Just do it. You are the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. You make up rules all the time. Just do it. Say, this is for the good of the game. We're going to put Zach Wheeler on the roster. And that's how it goes. And anybody's unhappy about it, the complaint line forms to the left. So you can come see me in the office later. All right, that was number 3 in our lineup of Phillies topics. So here's our cleanup hitter. The Phillies have some left-handed reliever problems here, guys. Tanner Banks, recently recalled from Lehigh Valley, gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs in Wednesday's 11-5 loss to the Reds. Gave up those home runs to L.A. De La Cruz, Sal Stewart, and J.J. Blade. Hey, look, at least it was to the best hitters. At least it was to the best that Cincinnati had to offer. But after being one of the Phillies' most effective left-handed relievers in 2024 and 25, here we are seeing the schizophrenic nature of relief pitching as Tanner Banks' ERA now stands at 7.14 on the season. That's incredible. This is a guy the Phillies were relying on heavily this year to be a left-handed bridge to Juan Duran, and he is giving them absolutely no chance to win games when he's in there. A 7.14 ERA for Tanner Banks. Again, just recalled from Lehigh Valley. They had to send him down to the minors. Clearly didn't help. Things did not get fixed. But that's not the only left-handed reliever issue that the Phillies had. Jose Alvarado also made an appearance in the game on Wednesday and showed why he is virtually unusable right now. He entered in the bottom of the sixth, and look, the Phillies were down by 3 runs. So this game was not over. It was 7-4 at the time. And here's what Jose Alvarado did upon entering the game in the bottom of the sixth. It went walk, walk. He walks the first two guys. You cannot do that, man. You cannot walk the first two hitters. Then he gets a fly out. Then he gives up an RBI single. Then gets a strikeout. So he gets the second out. But then a two-out walk to load the bases. So that's 3 walks in the inning from Jose Alvarado. And then, of course, when you do that, the baseball gods are not happy with you. He gives up a 3-run double to blow the game wide open for the Cincinnati Reds. And Jose Alvarado's ERA now stands at 7.03. So he and Tanner Banks, a little heated rivalry here to see which left-handed reliever can finish with the highest ERA. Right now, Tanner Banks has him by a little bit. It's just a hair, just a little bit. 7.14 to Alvarado's 7.03. But they're not the only bad left-handed relievers in this Phillies bullpen. Kyle Backus was sent down to AAA as the Phillies recalled Brad Keller ahead of Wednesday's game. Kyle Backus's ERA with the Phillies was 5.87 in his second go-around. I don't want to see him again. I was really excited about him in spring training. He stinks. So the Phillies really don't have anything coming out of the bullpen from the left-hand side outside of Tim Mayza. Thank heavens the Phillies signed Tim Mayza to a minor league deal in spring training. His 2.88 ERA makes him the only guy thrown from the left side out of that bullpen that you can trust. And so, obviously, this takes you to trade deadline thoughts. Before I get to that, though, Todd Zielecki noted that with Jose Alvarado and Tanner Banks both having ERAs over 7, they are two of only 3 pitchers this year in Major League Baseball with an ERA over 7 in 25 or more appearances. That's a nice special collection for the Phillies to have, right? Not what you want to see. I'm going to move on to number 5 in the lineup, because number 4 in the lineup here and the 5th spot in this lineup of Phillies topics will lead us into the general discussion that I wanted to have about both of these different things. And that is the 5th starter issues that the Phillies also have. These 5th starter games are becoming automatic scheduled losses. They are losing every single one of these trips through the rotation. When you get to Alan Ronhell's spot in the rotation, it started at the beginning of the year with Andrew Painter. Taijuan Walker's had some time as the 5th starter. Now you're going with Alan Ronhell. You're trying to get some bullpen games done in here. Nothing's working. Alan Ronhell had done reasonably well, but it's quite obvious he is not a long-term solution here. You are lucky if he gets you through 4 innings mostly unscathed. In this one, he couldn't give you that. On Wednesday night, he went 3 1/3 innings, gave up 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. He allowed 2 home runs. His ERA rises to 4.19 on the season. The Reds hit 5 dingers on the night, by the way. So Cincinnati was teeing off on Phillies pitching and just a ragtag bunch of arms going out there on Wednesday night. So this takes us to our overall question here. You've got this issue with the number 5 starter. You have issues with Aaron Nola, too, at the number 4 spot. He had a good outing his last time out. I am under no illusion that Aaron Nola is going to replicate that and be able to sustain good outings. So you have issues here at the starting rotation. Andrew Painter pitched really well his last outing in Lehigh Valley, but he's only made 2 starts there. If he strings together a few good starts, then yes, I think you'll see him called up because they desperately need him. They desperately need another starting pitcher who can give you some innings and give you some results. But right now the Phillies don't have that. So they got to make some trades here coming up in the next couple of weeks. The trade deadline is coming up in a little over 3 weeks. Do the Phillies have enough to get a depth starter and a left-handed reliever or 2 and another bat? It's probably not, right? So they got to choose. And this is the question everybody's asking themselves right now. What would you prioritize? Would you prioritize a starting pitcher so that every 5th game isn't a scheduled loss? Do you go after relievers, given the fact that you have 2 of the only 3 pitchers in baseball with an ERA over 7 in 25 or more appearances? That can't continue. Do the Phillies go get Aroldis Chapman? Do they go after the Giants' Robbie Ray, and put him in the starting rotation and then move him to the bullpen for the playoffs. Is that the kind of lefty you're looking for? And what do you have to give up in order to get that? That's kind of, I mean, there's a few teams who we know right now, I think, are going to be selling. Not many. There's not many sellers right now. And so these sellers are going to be able to demand a king's ransom because there aren't many sellers. Over the course of the next couple of weeks, you may start to see some more separation, and maybe teams like the Nationals, like the Red Sox, like the Pirates, maybe they start to fade, maybe they start to fall back a little bit, and it becomes clear that they're not as good as the real true playoff contenders. But for right now, everybody in the American League is close, with the exception of the Royals, really, and the Angels. You know, they're just, there's a chasm between those two teams and the rest of the American League, but the rest of the American League is all still battling. So we still don't really know who the true sellers and the true buyers are just yet. But if you're just looking at names, Aroldis Chapman has to be at the top of your list if you're the Phillies. Robbie Ray probably has to be at the top of your list, but you can't get both of them. And we have been talking for most of the season about the biggest need being a bat for this team, because you still are playing Derek Hill a little too much. And I got a Derek Hill note at the end of this podcast. I love Derek Hill and what he's brought to the team. But is that your guy? Is that your right-handed outfielder? Maybe it is. I think the pitching issue right now supersedes the offense, which I would not have thought when the Phillies were 9-19 in April. But they are getting enough production offensively from up and down the lineup right now. The issue is the pitching. It's this fourth and fifth spot in the rotation, and it's the bullpen. Thankfully, in the playoffs, you need three great starters, and the Phillies have that. But you've got to shore up this bullpen. You've got to, and moving Jesus Luzardo to the bullpen is not the answer. You actually need to go get relievers, because you need Jesus Luzardo in the starting rotation. You can't afford to not have him there. All right, so that was that's through the number five spot in this lineup of Phillies topics. Let's get to the number six spot, and this also has to do with the trade deadline. The Phillies farm system. Baseball America ranked the Phillies farm system this week 29th in Major League Baseball, and they deserve every bit of that grade. I've been talking about the farm system all year because I'm just fed up. We've kind of just accepted that the Phillies are never going to produce good prospects. The Baseball America noted that their preseason ranking was 20. Now, that's also because technically Andrew Painter and Justin Crawford still counted as prospects. They hadn't joined the big league team yet. But Andrew Painter has graduated, as has Justin Crawford, so they're no longer considered prospects. According to Baseball America, the Phillies have only two top 100 prospects, having the second worst farm system in baseball. Gage Wood, they have ranked number 69, and shortstop Aiden Miller, they have ranked number 80. He's fallen quite a bit because he's got this bad back that the Phillies are totally quiet about, totally mum about, not sharing information on what's going on with Aiden Miller. And as a result, he hasn't pitched at all. He hasn't played at all this year. So you're losing a whole year of development for Aiden Miller here in 2026, which means not only do you probably not see him this year, I don't know that you see him next year. I mean, it's a disaster. This farm system is a disaster. The strength of the system, according to Baseball America, is right-handed pitching. Gage Wood is a potentially fast-moving prospect. Ramon Marquez, Moises Chacé, who has also been battling Tommy John surgery and trying to come back from that. Matthew Fisher, Cody Balker, Alex McFarlane, Wenhui Pan, Chanmin Park, and Brad Pacheco. Those pitchers mean that nearly half of the Phillies' top 20 prospects are right-handed pitchers. The system weakness, offensive impact. With Aiden Miller sidelined by a significant back injury, there are very few well-rounded hitters in the system, especially ones who project to play up the middle positions. Infielder Arun Escobar can hit, but he will have to improve to stick at second base long-term. Many of the team's top position prospects face hit tool questions. This is brutal, guys. This is brutal. Their top 10, Gage Wood, Aiden Miller, Francisco Renteria is their number three prospect. He's 17. They just selected him in the international draft. that's your number three prospect. I mean, he looks like a stud prospect. There's no doubt about it. And maybe he is on this team by the time he turns 19. But that's not great. Ramon Marquez, right-handed pitcher, is their number four prospect. Dante Norrie, who was great in the World Baseball Classic, has struggled big time this year down in Reading and is now injured. He's the number five prospect. Arun Escobar is number six. Gabriel Rincones, who's now at the big league level and struggling, although he's looked a little bit better over the last few games, he's the number seven prospect. Aurelio Farabas, a catcher, is the number eight prospect. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. Moises Chassé, who again has been hurt for the last year and a half, is their ninth best prospect. Matthew Fisher, 10. Carson DeMartini, shortstop, is 11. Griffin Burkholder, number 12, an outfielder. Right-handed pitcher Cody Bauker, 13. Lefty Cade Obermueller, number 14. Right-hander Alex McFarland, number 15. By the way, McFarland needs to be in the big leagues. He is absolutely blowing people away down in the minors. And I know Seth Johnson was kind of doing the same thing. McFarland's different. I think he's got a whole bunch of different stuff. He's a wholly different pitcher. He needs to be in the big leagues sooner rather than later. I really don't know what they're waiting for. Brian Rincon, who's had a better year offensively at shortstop, is number 16. Wenhui Pan, right-handed pitcher, number 17. Chanmin Park, right-handed pitcher, 18. Brad Pacheco, number 19, right-handed pitcher. And then number 20 is Raylan Heredia. He is an outfielder. It's just bad, guys. So there's not much there to trade. You might want to get Aroldis Chapman or Robbie Ray. What do you have to offer? I mean, unless you're going to move Andrew Painter at this point. And you know what? I'm fine with moving Andrew Painter. If you can get something really good for Andrew Painter, do it. You can, for Aiden Miller, do it. Any of them. I don't care about any of these prospects. I don't care about a single one of them because I don't trust any of them. I know back in the day, I sold a bunch of t-shirts that said, trust the prospects. Look what happens when you trust the prospects. They let you down because that's what prospects do. They should be capital to add to your major league team. Because the Phillies are trying to keep allow the farm system to feed into the big league roster, but it's not working. And it hasn't worked since the Howard Utley Rollins Hamels era. The Phillies have had some guys. Aaron Nola came through the system and has been a productive major league player. Rhys Hoskins was drafted by the team, came up through the system and has had a decent major league career. Alec Bohm, I guess you'd have to consider also one of those guys. Bryson Stott, you'd have to consider one of those guys. But it hasn't been a steady stream. You know, the Phillies didn't draft Christopher Sanchez. They did select Ranger Suarez, so Suarez is a success story. So there are some, but not enough. And right now the system is just in absolutely dire straits. It's been bad. So this is the issue that the Phillies are facing right now in trying to improve the major league roster. There's not much to select from the farm system. And so you may have to trade from the big league roster, and that might include Andrew Painter. That might include, I don't even know who from the big league roster you would move along at this point. All right, now we are down to the number seven spot in our starting lineup of Phillies topics, and that is Don Mattingly's future. In an interview on ESPN prior to Wednesday's game, Mattingly said he would like to manage the Phillies beyond this year. Let me play a little bit of that for you again. This was on ESPN earlier in the day.
If the idea is brought by the Phillies about you managing beyond this year, how would you feel about that?
Oh, I would do it. I kind of committed myself to 2 years with the Phillies when I came over. So, you know, whatever Dave wants to do. In that regard, but yeah, I think I would like to do it.
Now, this is very, very interesting stuff because just this week it was reported the Phillies are still likely to hire fired Red Sox manager Alex Cora next year. That Don Mattingly is still just the interim manager. He has not been named the full-time manager. The Phillies are playing really well under Don Mattingly. And as you know, he came here for 2 years. He was going to be the bench coach for 2 years, but now he's the manager. It seems like Dombrowski just loves Alex Cora, wants to bring Alex Cora aboard. I'm not an Alex Cora guy, never have been. I don't know if I'm a huge Mattingly guy either, though. But Mattingly has delivered results. Ultimately, it's going to come down to the playoffs. No matter what Mattingly does here with this team in the regular season, it's going to come down to the playoffs. It's going to come down to the postseason. Can Don Mattingly do what the managers before him could not do, and that's win a World Series. It's asking a lot of Don Mattingly to do that, but can they get him back to the World Series? If you get him back to the World Series, do you tell Don Mattingly goodbye if he wants to come back for another year just because you want to go get Alex Cora? I don't. Unless the Phillies just stumble their way to the World Series where Mattingly's making mistake after mistake after mistake, and yet they keep covering up for it. But I don't anticipate that happening. It's really hard to get to a World Series like that. So here you got, this is an interesting development. Don Mattingly openly saying he would like to return to the Phillies next year. And we'll see if and how Dave Dombrowski and the rest of the Phillies front office responds to that. All right, number 8 in our starting lineup of Phillies topics here for your midweek podcast. That base running controversy in Tuesday night's win over the Reds was really something else. So this is the first time I've seen this. And maybe I've been out to lunch. Maybe I've just had too many errands to run with the kids and I've missed games in which this has happened. But it was really weird the other night when Elly De La Cruz is trying to get to second base before the tag play can be. So there's one out. Ground ball's hit to third baseman Alec Bohm, looking to turn a double play in order to get the Phillies out of an inning. Throws the ball to second, but Elly De La Cruz, hustling all the way, gets to second base before the throw can get there. Bryson Stott makes the pivot, though, and gets the runner out at first. However, Elly De La Cruz, instead of sliding into second base, which you would normally do in that situation, because, you know, you don't want to run off the base and risk getting tagged out, he runs through the second base bag. Because, like we've told players throughout history, when they're trying to get to first base as quickly as possible, don't slide into first base. You slow yourself down. So Elly De La Cruz took it upon himself to run through the bag at second base. Now, that's pretty smart because he knew that Bryson Stott was going to release the baseball, that Bryson Stott was going to throw the ball to first base, so that if Elly De La Cruz runs through the second base bag and is 4 or 5 steps off the bag as if he were going to run into left field, that Stott was not going to hold onto the ball and turn around and tag him out. So Elly De La Cruz runs through the second base bag. He's safe at second, and that was a legitimate safe call. But the Phillies protested because they felt Elly De La Cruz abandoned the second base bag. So essentially what you have to do is, like, if you run through that second base bag and then you kind of wander off, unless you're making a turn towards third, or you're making a direct return back to the bag, that's called abandoning the bag, and then you're ruled out of the baseline. So you can't challenge whether or not a player is out of the baseline. That apparently is not a challengeable call. And after a long video replay, the umpires ruled that Elly De La Cruz did not abandon the bag, that he was allowed to return to second base. He was not out of the baseline. The Phillies ended up getting out of the inning without giving up any runs, but it incensed the Phillies bench. Caleb Cotham, the pitching coach, gets tossed from the game. And then Bobby Dickerson, another coach, gets tossed. And he's running onto the field. He's getting ready to go after somebody. He's getting in people's faces. He's jawing. He has to be forcibly held back. Bobby Dickerson, guys. I didn't know Bobby had it in him. It was something to see, but it was a weird play. I've never seen a runner run through second base in order to beat a force play for a double play. But it was, hey, I'm going to give Elly De La Cruz some credit. That was smart. Smart play by Elly De La Cruz to run through second base, knowing that if he overran the base, Bryson Stott wasn't going to turn around and tag him out, that he was going for the double play, and that he could get back to the bag. I didn't really have an issue with the way the umpires ruled it, to be honest with you. I do think it's silly that you can run through the second base bag. I mean, you should only be able to take like a step or two off the bag before you're out of the baseline. I think he probably should have been ruled out of the baseline because I feel you're taking 4 or 5 steps off the bag, you know, and you're on the edge of the infield dirt, which is where Elly De La Cruz was. I feel like you're out of the baseline in that spot. You know, I mean, unless you're turning towards third and running to third and just taking a bad line towards third, that's one thing, but I don't think he did that. I mean, maybe there was like a shoulder turn towards third base, but he was clearly not rounding second to go to third. So I thought he should have been out of the baseline. And that's what the Phillies thought, too. The Phillies were mad that they couldn't challenge that. They were mad about De La Cruz not abandoning the bag. It turned out not to hurt the Phillies. It turned out to be just kind of a little bit of entertainment. It's always fun to watch some guys get kicked out of a ball game and go a little bit berserk over something like this. Just to get that worked up over it. But that's what happened on Tuesday night. It was a little bit of fun at the Great American Ballpark. I don't even know. Are they still calling it Great American Ballpark? I don't know. I am calling it that. I will call it that forever. I'm sure there's some bank or there's some pet store that has taken over the naming rights of the park in Cincinnati. But that's what I'm going to call it. All right. And batting ninth in our Phillies topics for this week, it's going to be a little bit of a combo here. Going to be a couple of stats that I want to throw your way here from some guys who hit down at the bottom of the order. Derek Hillstatt, first of all. Pat Galen of CBS3 noted this on X. Already, in just 18 games with the Phillies, Derek Hill has been worth 0.7 wins above replacement with the Phils. In 602 games with the Phillies, Nick Castellanos was worth 1.1 win above replacement. That's right. Derek Hill is just 0.4 of a WAR behind Nick Castellanos in terms of overall worth as a Philadelphia Philly. Derek Hill has done it in 18 games. Nick Castellanos got to his 1.1 WAR in 602 games with the Phillies. And then the other bonus stat I wanted to throw your way, Justin Crawford had an RBI triple in this game. He is batting 309 since June 1st. Kind of gone quietly, a little bit under the radar. But Justin Crawford, after struggling mightily in the month of May, has turned it around since June 1st and is batting 309, having a nice little go of it, and playing some better defense in center field as well. If your number nine hole hitter is giving you good defense in center field and hitting over 300, you cannot ask for anything more than that. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to encourage you to check out the end of the week podcast that Justin and Liz will have coming your way at some point on Friday. If you want to watch the roundtable episode that Liz and I and Justin did on Sunday night, you can go over to the WHYY YouTube channel, subscribe over there, and you can watch us there. Again, tell your friends and family members about Hittin' Season. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star rating and a review. I would love to know what you all think of the show. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.